Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Yvonne Mason. I am your host tonight on Off the Chain, and those of you who have listened to this show before and have been with me since the inception know that we are off the chain here. We don't take anything too seriously because none of us get out of alive. Anything is bound to be talked about as long as it is not illegal, immoral, unethical, or extremely pornographic. Tonight, my guest is a lovely, lovely Southern lady. She is an author, a journalist, a military veteran, and I want to welcome her to the show. Her name is Sherry Rentzler. She is a multi-award-winning, multi-genre author. She's a writing coach and a speaker. And she has currently authored one photography book called I Wish You Joy, three books of poetry, Paper Bones, By Light Betrayed, Poetry of the Vampires, The Book of Now, and Midnight Assassin, which is a tale of lust and revenge, which a dark urban fantasy novella. Her most recent release, The Book of Now, is a compelling book of nonfiction poetry, which are issues that are taken from current events. On the horizon, she has a workbook for writers who need help building a daily writing routine, a fictional memoir, and the summer of 2007, another vampire series. She is a retired U.S. Air Force non-combat veteran, and she completed her bachelor and graduate degrees while serving our country. Her background includes bylines in newspapers and online journals, plus previous work as an assistant poetry editor for an online poetry journal, a freelance columnist, and a photojournalist. Sherry was a featured author in Southern Writers Magazine and In Focus on Women Magazine, as well as a featured guest speaker on numerous radio shows. Also, Sherry is the Charlotte, North Carolina Regional Municipal Liaison for National Novel Writing Month, promoting writing and literacy for all ages. She is also an activist. Her causes include the National Network to End Domestic Violence, as well as programs to end bullying like StopBullying.gov. Also, Sherry is a strong advocate of Smile Train, that sees children get corrective surgery for cleft lips and palates. Now listen to this, ladies and gentlemen. Her guilty pleasures include indulging in fine wine, dark chocolates, old black and white movies. She's also a recognized vampire scholar and a dragon lover, a woman after my own heart. Not only that, but she and her husband live in Mint Hill, North Carolina. It gets no better than that, Miss Sherry. Welcome to our show, and thank you for your service to our country.
Oh, Yvonne, thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to be with you. Boy, I don't know whether I should, you know, clap for myself after all of that. My goodness.
Absolutely clap for yourself. You earned it, lady.
I do have to correct you just on one little thing.
Okay.
I'm not a Southern lady. I happen to live here, but, honey, I'm a Yankee.
Well, you couldn't prove it by me. You've got that Southern
Well, I'm going to take that as a compliment.
That tells me you have been in the South long enough. You are
yes, ma'am.
Southernized.
There you go. Thank you very much. I've been adopted.
Yes, you have. And see, for me to tell someone that they are a Southern cousin, they've earned that. And
well, thank you.
You served our country, my sweet friend, so you can be Southern if you want to.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
This is going to be lots of fun.
Yes, ma'am, it is. So let's start off with your background. Lord, I feel so inadequate compared to all your accomplishments.
Well, after all of that, even I was getting a hot flash. Goodness gracious.
So tell me, what did you get your bachelor's and graduate degrees in while serving our country?
My bachelor's is a bachelor in psychology. It's a Bachelor of Arts in Psychology. And I wanted originally to go to law school and eventually become a forensic psychologist, but I was over the age limit to go to law school and have the Air Force pay for it, so I kind of threw that by the wayside and decided that I would just become an officer and just stay with the military. And after I got my commission, then I went back to school and I got my graduate degree and I got a Master's of Science in Human Resources Management.
Wow. Multi-talented.
Well, it's a fancy name for saying it.
Well, this is why you and I got along from the get-go, because my degree is in criminal justice, with a backup in serial killers and psychology. So, see, we understood each other from the beginning of this.
Absolutely. I wanted to study the psychopharmacology and understand why these people took these drugs to handle their abnormal conditions. Being a kind of a off-the-wall kind of girl myself, I figured that would be a good course to study for me.
And what did you learn? I mean, not what did you learn. That's not the question I'm looking for. Did it open up ways for you to write your books?
Well, I've always been kind of a girl of the dark side. I've loved the vampires and the scary stories and Sherlock Holmes and the mystery dramas. And that's why I love the black and white movies so much, because the shadow play, you know, Citizen Kane type things, they really appeal to me from a very young age. So I don't know that I wanted to study it because of that, or I studied because I loved the creepy things. I'm not really sure. But I know that my writing takes a dark twist, and I love to do mysteries. Now, it's not crime mysteries like a lot of people do, but I do dark urban fantasies that have a twist to them usually.
Well, you go to the dark side. That's what's important. Welcome to
Absolutely.
The dark side, Terry. Now,
well, you know, even my current book, The Book of Now, even though it's nonfiction and it's current events, it is the dark side of what's happening out there in the world today. So even that tends to go, you know, over the cliff, so to speak. So,
well, I was reading some of those earlier today, some of the poetry, and you're right. You put into poetry what people are thinking and are afraid to say out loud, simply because most people want to live in that fantasy world with rose-colored glasses.
You're right. And I think sometimes poetry lets us see the truth in a non-scary, non-threatening way.
That's true.
Unlike reading the newspaper headlines that says, you know, the world's coming to an end, a poet can say, well, you know, when the clock strikes midnight, then the world crumbles around you. You know, it's happening. It's just not happening quite so horribly.
It makes it romantic.
Well, yeah, normally, except I don't think I did that in the Book of Now. I always tell people this was the one that made me jump off the cliff. this was such an experience. Oh, my goodness.
Well, how did you come about to write the Book of Now? What projected you into that thought process of putting current events to portrait? I mean, that is just mind-blowing. It is just so different and so unique and so interesting.
Well, thank you, but I must tell you that I did not do anything that hasn't been done before. Social issues and social injustice has long been the cry of poets everywhere. And I just think it finally hit me to jump on the bandwagon. I mean, we can go all the way back to China in 6,000 years ago when the Chinese were writing social issues poetry way back then, about the emperor and the current conditions of the soil and just everything. And everybody's heard of the beat movement of poets, the beat poets in the 50s. And they were some of the first modern poets who actually talked about, you know, controversial issues like homosexuality and drug use and black and white people being married, and I mean, it was, you know, scandalous. You know, people like Allen Ginsberg and Jack Kerouac. I mean, they were writing about issues that they couldn't write while living in the States, so they moved to Paris and they started the Beat Movement. Good old Bohemians, gotta love them, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So for me, it was just a matter of, the truth is I started hemorrhaging poetry, and that's the truth. It started in January, and I was writing poetry nonstop for like 3 months, and we're talking like dozens of poems a day, every day, sometimes in the middle of the night. And it was all based on things from the headlines, the bombings, the terror attacks, the threats, the politics, the name-calling, the horrible bigotry, the defacement of our natural wonders and resources, and, of course, issues that are close to my heart, domestic violence and abuse, and international slavery. And it was just ongoing and never stopping, and so the poetry didn't end for me either. And finally I decided after about 150 poems and in about 3 months, which is unheard of for a poet, I think. It just doesn't happen like that. I thought, well, maybe I'm onto something and maybe I need to do something with some of these. So that was how the Book of Now came about. And I asked myself, well, what if Pandora had reopened her box of horrors and that's why the world was coming unglued the way it was? And what if I went with that analogy and said, well, here you go. You know, we have the ability. Yep, we have the ability to stop this if you know what the key is. And so that is presented in the Book of Now in the back, in addition to what all the chaotic things are.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I was going to download it to my Kindle, but I'm not going to download it. I'm buying the book because I want that book in my hand. Like I said, I was reading some of the poetry, and the poetry just jumps out at you. It makes things that are in the headlines real. And when I mean real, we know they're real, but San Bernardino is 3,000 miles away from Port St. Lucie, Florida, so it's not in my backyard. And as a general rule, unless it's in our backyard, we say, oh, yeah, another terrorist attack, big deal, and we go on about our life.
Uh-huh.
But your poem on San Bernardino made me stop and think, yeah, that was in my backyard. That was like 9/11. That's important. We have to, like you said, we have to put a stop to it. We have to stop being complacent.
Yes, ma'am. We definitely have to stand up and let our voices be heard.
So, since we're talking about your books, let's backtrack a little bit and go back up to your background. You said you're not Southern-born and bred, but you've been adopted by the South. Where are you from originally?
I was born in Illinois.
Oh, that's pretty South.
Yes. Oh, no.
Sometimes
good old Midwest girl.
Sometimes we'll claim them as Southerners. A lot of my family moved to Illinois back in the day, so, and Abraham Lincoln's from there. So, yeah, we'll
that's right.
Be a Southern. So there you go.
But I lived there until I was 11, and then we moved to Florida. Ha-ha.
Well, see, there
and,
you go.
I grew up in junior high and high school, going to Titusville, in Titusville there, where the Kennedy Space Center is, because my dad worked with Boeing and Grumman and NASA. And
a spitting distance from my house. It's only an hour and a half.
Uh-huh, I know.
North of me. So let's go and let's talk about your causes a little bit because your causes actually kind of fit into your writings. Paper Bones, for instance.
Okay, my first
yes.
Real book.
Paper Bones, ladies and gentlemen, this is how Paper Bones is described. A contemporary poetry reflecting current issues, including domestic violence, teenage prostitution and suicide, HIV, yellow journalism, as well as housework, love, and childhood. Tell me about this book.
This book it took me most of my life to write this book. It was something I'd always dreamed of. These poems are so much a part of my actual life, things that I'm familiar with and people that I knew well, instances that I actually lived. And it's just a product of so many good times and bad. There's a poem in there called When Rachmaninoff Smiled, and it's about a little girl who went to ballet class and danced in her first recital, and that was me. And it, by the way, has black and white photography in there, and all of those are by me, pictures taken by me. So that was also my first, you know, challenge to do photography, so it was a lot of fun. But there's poetry in here about fun things like housework and first love and mourning a loss of a childhood friend. But then there, the poems in here about domestic violence, I was very proud to be able to make a contribution of those to the End of Silence campaign sponsored by Jenna Brooks. She's quite a well-known lady that worked in the domestic violence campaign programs. And so I stuck my toe in the water and wanted to talk about things that mattered to me, but I also wanted to have some fun with some things like tossing my skin in with the laundry and, you know, odd things like that. So there's a poem in here about foodies, foodies who like to be pretentious and say that they like to, you know, go gourmet, you know. And really, they're sitting around sucking on peanut butter watching late-night TV, you know. So so this was just a book born out of my love of words and fun. And, yeah, I had a few little, you know, commentaries to make. But on the whole, it was things from life that I just thought were interesting. And it really was just kind of a need to let go of some things that I'd been living with for a really long time.
They say that writing is a catharsis for the soul, and I believe that because we as writers and authors, if number one, we can't shut the voices up in our head for one thing, and number two, when we write something that is close to our heart, like your causes are, it's healing to us. Whether we've experienced them, whether we're just close to someone who has, it becomes healing to us so that we can put it in perspective and do as you do, make a difference in someone's life.
Well, I hope to. And if awareness can make a difference, then I'm all for that. There are some wonderful people online who do a lot of good works in some of these causes, and I try to emulate them and be a voice out of the shadows kind of a thing. And I follow in their footsteps, basically. But if one person, just one person, will hear and feel encouraged to not commit suicide, to step away from a bully, to seek shelter away from an abuser, if just one person is moved to do that, then I will have done my job.
Exactly. Tell me about your book, I Wish You Joy. That title is so uplifting and so, it makes me warm inside.
Aw, well, that was for my mom, who's no longer with us, I'm sad to say. But that was done originally through Blurb.com, and they were having a photography contest. And I had all these photographs that I had taken while I was in the service, and I thought, hey, let me just put this book together and enter this contest and see if they'll like my photography. And they didn't. But, you know, amateur me, competing against all these professional photographers, you know, what a joke. But I had a lot of fun putting the book together because basically what I did was I did homage to my mother who always used to say to me, honey, the one thing I wish for you in your life is that I wish you joy. Whatever you do, wherever you go, she said, I want you to know the joy of living. And, you know, so this book was about her wish for me, and we used to wish on dandelions together. So it starts out with making a wish on a dandelion and me traveling the world trying to find my joy and all the pictures that I took, when basically joy is to be found in your own backyard, kind of a Wizard of Oz kind of a thing. There's no place like home, and joy is where you are, you know. And so that was what the book was all about. And I had done it for my mom in homage to her after she passed away. And then Blurb decided to publish these books. They gave them ISBNs, and they made a deal with Amazon, and boom, I had a book.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, I'm published. Yay. That was back in 2008. It had not originally been intended to be a for sale book, but, you know, there it is. It's outrageously expensive, overpriced, because it's specialty paper and it's hardback and everything. It is available on iTunes. Yay. You can get it for $3.99 or whatever, but it was kind of an accident to be published with that. But I like it. I'm glad it's there. It's overpriced monstrosity, but you can preview it and pretty much read the whole thing, so, you know.
Well, let's talk about, and when I saw this one, I'm going, this really is a woman after my own heart.
By Life Betrayed, right?
Yes, because I am a lover of all things vampires and dragons myself.
I read that about you.
And I was reading some of the poetry, and I'm going, oh, yeah, I'm getting this book, too. So I'm buying my own Christmas present this year.
That one is full of pictures, too, only they're color photography that I did. I get a wonderful publisher who allowed me to have as many color photographs as I wanted. And so that gave me an opportunity to really put some of my things out there and have some fun. Which I enjoyed immensely. But it's a smaller book compared to so many others, only because it does deal with dark subjects. And I also wanted to put an excerpt in the back of an upcoming novella that I had done. And so I used that kind of as a forum to advertise my fiction that was coming up. And but I had a lot of fun with this because everybody loves the cover.
The cover is interesting, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to tell you, it is very interesting. This woman is very talented on so many levels.
I did not make the cover. This was made by a gentleman that I met on Twitter who designs covers, and his name is Travis Miles, and he did this wonderful cover. I said, Travis, I want to do a vampire book, but the cover must not be black or red, or have tombstones, or blood, you know, or red letters, or any of that stuff. I want it to be sexy and sultry and break the rules. And he was okay.
It broke the rules, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to tell you, if you didn't know better, you would think that it was a steamy romance harlequin novel. Yes. Yeah, well, the cover guy, the guy on the cover is in various stages of undress. That's all I'm going to say about that.
No, he's not. He's fully clothed. He's got a coat on.
But my imagination works in overtime.
Yeah, baby. You just want him to be in a state of undress, see? It's those
eyes. See, there you go.
He captures you with his eyes.
Yes, he does. Well, vampires do that, though.
Exactly.
So your cover nailed it, I'm going to tell you. And that goes back to what you and I were talking about before the show, that your books are eye-catching, and that's all part of the marketing that we as authors have to do. Not only do we have to sell our books with eye-catching covers, but we got to put ourselves out there, and like you and I were talking about earlier, we got some authors out there that don't understand the word free is really free.
Yeah, and it's really odd. I mean, let's take your radio show, for example. You are being so warm and generous by offering so many budding up-and-coming authors and experienced authors a chance to come on your radio show and talk about their work. And you're doing this for free. You're not asking us to make a donation or pay a cover or anything, which is, I'm sorry, unheard of. And it's a wonderful opportunity, and so many authors are just not taking advantage, and I don't understand.
I think they're afraid.
You think it's fear?
Yeah, I do, because the acronym for fear is false evidence that appears real, and they're afraid to put themselves out there because they're afraid they'll say the wrong thing on radio and it'll be out there in the netherworld forever and a day, and they're afraid that they won't come across as professional, or that they come across as too human, or they're not good enough. Who the hell knows? All I'm saying is get on this show and have fun with me. I won't eat you. Well, maybe.
Well, you'll have to share because I can't eat a whole one by myself.
Okay. You got it. Speaking of sharing, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's kind of important that authors take a minute and say, I have an opportunity to promote myself. It's not going to cost me anything except a little bit of my time to have a few laughs, have some fun, talk about my work. And okay, so maybe it makes me a little uncomfortable to talk about me. All right, that's true for most authors. Everybody thinks authors are narcissists. We're really not. we're loners.
We really have our moments of lack of self-confidence.
Oh, absolutely. We're insecure at our core because we're so afraid someone's going to say, I hated your book.
I've had that a time or two.
Oh, me
now
too.
Yeah, that's why
we were talking about, you develop a thicker skin, and you have to just get out there and say, here I am, here's my work, and maybe it's my age that allows me to do that with a thicker skin than perhaps when I was 20, for sure. But, yeah, when I was 20, if you said, I hate your book, I was like, okay.
I'm going to my room and cry.
And now it's like, okay, go buy another one. But it's true that
you don't know what you're missing.
That's right, babe. Go get a different book. But it's true that we have to just take a chance, jump off the cliff, be out there, and hope that people will pick up on us. And it's a tough sell, I guess, if you're younger or inexperienced. Well, or inexperienced at any age, I guess.
Well, what you just said made perfect sense. If they don't jump off the cliff and take that leap of faith, it's for darn sure that their book's not going to sell, because it's not going to sell itself. They're not just going to put it out there and say, okay, my book's on Amazon, go get it. People look at them like they have two heads.
Why should
I go buy your book? What makes you special?
But the other side of that coin is that if you don't, if you expect to sell by not advertising, you must be the most wonderful writer in the whole wide world to be able to sell books without talking about it.
I haven't met a writer like that yet.
Me either. Even Stephen King talks about his stuff.
Exactly. And he talks about himself, which
all the time.
Yeah. I mean, the man's, if his ego is false, God love him.
Yeah, I guess there's a lesson there, you know?
But we have to do that. As writers and authors, we have to, musicians, artists, anybody that's out there in the art field, this is what, all right, let's think about this too, Sherry. We go to apply for a job. If we don't go talk about ourselves, do we expect to get that job?
Heck no.
Well, that's exactly what we're doing. We're applying for a job. We're applying for readers. They're our employers.
No, we want to be seen, we want to be heard, we want to sell, and we want to be remembered.
Exactly. Unlike some of them that have fallen through the cracks to obscurity until they're dead for 200 years, like God loving Poe, which is one of my favorite authors.
Mine too. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I would like to be remembered now, where I can appreciate somebody remembering me, rather than having to come back and haunt people just to find out, did you read her book? Yeah, it was great. You know, 100 years after I read it.
I'm going to come back and haunt them anyway, just because I can.
I'm only doing it to see if they're still reading my work.
There you go. Speaking of your work, let's talk about this Midnight Assassin. Now, this one is definitely on my reading list. It's an urban fantasy, ladies and gentlemen, with a noir flavor and a seductive bite. A fast-moving tale of murder and revenge, including a dangerous red-headed vampire.
My girl Dre.
Tell us about this book, because this sounds wonderful.
Well, I'm pleased to say that it just won a bronze award from the Global eBook Awards competition for its in the fantasy paranormal area, and it won an honorable mention for the cover. So I'm very pleased, and thank you, Robin Ludwig, for doing my cover. But Midnight Assassin, go ahead.
You were headed in the direction I was trying to lead you, so continue.
Okay. Midnight Assassin is an urban fantasy. It deals with a couple of twins who are out to avenge their father's murder. And they've been waiting on this guy to get out of prison for some other unrelated crime. And now that he's out of prison, they're all set to kill him. Well, unfortunately, he has the attention of a vampire who's decided, no, she's going to do the killing. And the twins are in her way. And so she warns the twins off. And during the process of all this taking place between her and the twins, the bad guy has kidnapped one of the twins, and now the remaining twin must work with the vampire in order to seal the deal and take care of this guy. So it's kind of a, you know, work with the devil and see it through kind of a story. It has a little Godfather-y sort of mafia feel to it. I do like those old noir movies. It has a flavor of New York City. But Drahomira, who is my vampire, is a completely angst-free, non-sparkly, very lethal killer, and she likes it. So she's my rebel-rousing vampire, and we're going to see her again. She's coming back in another book, which will be the prequel to the series that's coming out next year.
So are you done yet with the prequel so that we can, when I finish this Midnight Assassin, I can just go right into the next book?
No, well, this one wasn't a prequel to anything. This was kind of an introduction to Dre. This is, I just wanted you to sort of meet her and get a flavor for her. And then I decided there was another novella that I could do that would be prequel to this series that's coming out next year. So I'm hoping to have that one done for Christmas.
Good, because I don't like waiting. Like, I have to wait with R.R. Martin till he gets his head out of the clouds
finish. Oh, my God, he's never going to do that book.
I'm telling you, it's driving me crazy.
Oh, me too. I mean, well, you know, halfway, we've moved on because this last season had nothing to do with anything, you know. So
exactly.
We're just out there in the world now waiting to see whether Jon Snow is really alive or dead or what the story is. So
I could have written 12 books. And the time is. I mean, I read all of the books, and you've read them. You know how thick they are. I read them all, I'm caught up, and I'm waiting, and I'm waiting, and I'm growing older and older and more decrepit, and I'm waiting. I'm thinking I'm going to be dead and gone by the time he releases this book.
But so in the meantime, while we wait for his stuff, we can be reading lots of other people.
Like you. That's why I said, is it going to be published before I'm dead and gone?
Oh, absolutely. The memoir and the novella are both slated to come out this year, as well as my first workbook, which is just about done. I had a book launch for the Book of Now this past Tuesday, so it kind of held me up a little bit. It was a fabulously good time, and I had a bunch of friends over to a local hangout here in Mint Hill called Vintner's Hill, I should say, and so we had ourselves a little book launch and celebration, and now that that's out of the way, I can go back to writing and working on this workbook and get back into my groove, which I'm looking forward to. This workbook is not to teach people how to write, how to do the craft. It's not that at all. This is like I hear people say all the time, gee, I'd like to write. Gee, I wish I knew how to write.
Uh-huh.
And they say, I don't know how to start. Well, this is how you start. This workbook is going to be like a beginner's. It's going to be in three volumes, which are beginner, intermediate, and advanced. And the beginner's workbook is like a journal, a daily thing you do. It's like, as I call it, exercises for your muse. it's just tapping into that will to create. And it's saying, okay, write about today, write about a word you learned, write about what you see out the window, write about what moved you today, what hurt you today. And it's just divided up into weeks where you learn to every day sit down. It isn't about writing a novel. It isn't about writing the epic or writing poetry. It's just writing. It's simple, everyday, cathartic expression. And once you do the workbook, you can do that first workbook as many times as you need to until you feel like you've got a good habit, good strong habit working. And then you move up to the next workbook. And the second workbook is a little bit more complicated. It makes you tap into your senses. It gives you new vocabulary. It asks you more in-depth questions. And it makes you dig deeper into yourself and strengthen your muse even harder. Still, I'm not teaching you how to be a writer. I'm just asking you to discover the writer in you. And when you get to the last workbook, the advanced workbook, this is when I start asking you to be more descriptive, to shed the ordinary words, to everyday write in a way that is beyond the normal, to use more complicated words. And by the end of that workbook, if you do that one several times, you are ready then to go study the craft. You'll be a stronger, ready-to-write writer. And
more
that's
confident.
What the workbooks are for. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Tell me about
because
your memoir.
My memoir. Oh. The memoir is called A Fictional Memoir. Not because it's fiction. A fictional memoir is I have changed the names of people and the places and rearranged the time periods. Basically, it's a true story with fictionalized settings and accounts. And that's done to protect the guilty, of course.
Of course. Except in my case, I've named the guilty because I dare them to do anything different.
Well, there are some innocent people who were involved that I probably don't want to name, you know, one of those deals. So
yep.
I'm leaving out a lot of those kinds of names. And just it's the story of how I learned what love really was and how I shook the fairy tale love to find real love. And I had to do it in a way that, well, baby boomers will relate to the tale that I have to tell. And the lessons that I have, I hope, are timeless enough that other people will tune into them and go, oh, okay, I see where she's going with this. So it's a little bit of vanity, but it is some very heartfelt lessons that I feel like I need to share. You know, I'm
and
almost 63 years.
Go ahead.
I'm almost 63 years old, so it's time to start, you know, sharing what I know.
And, again, we're back to that. It's a catharsis for you.
Yes. Yes, but it's also, I can have some fun now. I can tell some stories that I might not have told 20 years ago.
I understand that. I'm 65, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
So, you know,
about.
We're sisters here. We know that now we can tell those stories and we can laugh. And other people can go, oh, my God.
Yes. How can you laugh about that? Well, we're still here and we're still surviving. So, yeah,
exactly.
We can laugh about some of the stupid things we did.
Exactly. So that's why I'm having some fun with that. But at the same time, it does have a purpose, not just for my vanity, because it really isn't. I'm telling things about myself that I wouldn't have told 20 and 30 years ago. But the underlying reason for it is to share what I learned about love and how love is more than what I thought it was.
And we're back to that thing of, sadly, the last two generations don't understand real love as a general rule. There are exceptions, but most of them do not understand that love is a commitment, a full commitment.
I agree. And love is not this idyllic, you know, sugar-frosted wonderment this happily ever after concept is not love.
No, it is not. It's love is unconditional, totally forgiving, good times, bad times, ups and downs, walking through the woods, walking through the prairies, walking through the dry times, the rain, and then walking through the meadows. It's all of that. And it's a total
yes, but love is also pain and sadness and grit, and it's all the things that are bad, and yet you cling to that other person because, not because you have to have them, but because they are your helper, they are your rock, they are your part-time sanity, they are the shadow that you can walk in safely. And
they lift you up.
Exactly.
At your darkest time.
That was some things, that was some lessons about love that I needed to learn. I only saw what I thought were the happy things that could happen. You know, white horse, prince, forever after kind of stuff. And I had to discover through some very peculiar methods that that's not the way it works at all.
I understand exactly where you're coming from.
But, you know, when we were growing up, we grew up in that 1950s, you know, caress my face, kiss me, and now it's happily ever after. I mean, that's just what we were presented.
And there's no such thing as happily ever after.
Well, I did find my happily ever after, so, you know, I didn't get there the normal way, though.
Well, I found mine, too, and again, it took 30 years and several different detours to get here, but
amen, sister.
He is my strongest supporter. He has encouraged me in this adventure, even with his disabilities, and I'm sure your husband has too. They have encouraged us and let us live our dream and been there for us. And while
mine is a wonderment. He breathes life into me. And, you know, he doesn't, oddly enough, the man who loves me insanely but does not read a word that I write. He just is not into it, right?
But that's okay.
He's my staunchest ally, my biggest supporter, and he is always there for me. And every time I have an event, he's right there because he does believe in me because he knows that I believe in myself. And as long as we have that together, we share that, there's nothing we can't do. And so he's always been there for me.
Well, our friends tell us that separately we're both very strong and we're powerful people and a force to be reckoned with, but probably like you and your husband, but together we're unstoppable.
Yes, exactly. So, and see, voila. That is going to be the end result of the memoir. See, I don't even need to write it now. You have just told the story. Well, thanks so much, Yvonne.
You're quite welcome. Anytime I can be of service. Just makes people want to read it more now.
Well, I'm just going to have a smoldering guy on the cover. What can I say? And speaking of covers, we just did the cover shoot on that today. And I was out with Marissa Rose Shore from Cover Me Darling, and she was working on the cover, and my personal assistant, Terry Wilson, was there, and we were having a very hot day in the sun as we were shooting this cover. It was like 98 degrees out there. We were all melting. But I can't tell you what it is, but it was a really good shoot.
I can't wait to see. We're getting up on the 10-minute mark, and what I want to do is 5 minutes of this 10 minutes that we have left, I want you to explain to our listening audience where you and I are both, Lord willing, going to be next June and why put yourself out there on my show tonight, because it's marketing, it's pre-marketing for this event we're going to be at.
Yes, absolutely. The Space Coast author attendees or reader attendees, book attendees, is a brand new inaugural conference for readers and writers, and it's an author signing event, of which I'm pleased to say that I will be there as an author And so many others from around the country are coming to this marvelous four-day event taking place in Cocoa Beach, Florida. And we're going to be staying at the, I think it's the International Palms Resort, beautifully recently renovated resort hotel, which is just gorgeous on the beach. We're going to have such a good time. There's going to be scavenger hunt and author signings and a beach party. And the folks who are running this, Robbie Cox and Terry and his girl Sarah and Charlene Cox, all of these folks down there are putting this together with love and dedication and such commitment. This is just, it's going to be an incredible event. And if you are anywhere in Florida or you're vacationing, you need to buy a ticket and come to this. It's going to be one of the most talked about events of the year. I promise you, it's going to be huge. And I know that once you go, you're going to want to go back again and again. So I'm looking forward to this. I usually go to a couple events every year and never one this long, so I'm really looking forward to this. Are you going to be there, Yvonne?
Yes, I'm planning on it, the Lord willing, and nothing happens to my husband. The International Palms is one of my favorite hotels to stay at. It is, we've stayed there several times with Senate meetings, and it is an absolute amazing hotel. The people there are just, they're over the top. These are some of the nicest hotel people you will ever, ever meet. They are very accommodating, so you will enjoy your stay there. I'm probably going to drive back and forth depending on my husband. I've not booked a room because I'm not sure how I'm going to work that. But, yeah, I have a table there. I'm slated to be there. So we'll get to meet in person and hug each other.
I'm so glad.
Greet each other. What I want to do now is tell our listening audience where they can find you, how they can find you.
Okay.
On the internet.
I have a website. It's SherryRensselaer.com. That's SherryRensselaer. SherryRensselaer.com. I have a blog called Between the Lines, and there's information about all my books, which can be ordered from my website. And if you want a signed copy of one of my books, that can be arranged. There's a contact form on my website, which you can fill out. I will get, and we can make that happen. There's also signing up for my newsletter from my website there, too. But I'm also on Facebook. My author page is Author Sherry Rensselaer, all one word. And I'm on Twitter at Poet Phoenix, Poet Phoenix, one word. So I'm out there, same on Amazon. Goodreads, Poet Phoenix on Amazon, Poet Phoenix on LinkedIn, Poet Phoenix on Pinterest. I'm Poet Phoenix everywhere.
If someone wants to contact you for an event or to be on another radio show or to do an interview with on a blog, do they need to contact you or do they need to contact Terry or either of both of you?
Either or is fine. My PAA, Terry, is a marvelous person. She'll set you right up. She has her own Facebook page, which, if Terry, if you're listening, you need to tell me what that is so I can tell people. But I couldn't do it without her. She's wonderful. But she'll set the person up for interview. She can help you with press kit information. Or you can write to me at poetphoenix@yahoo.com. And I will help you any way I can. Or you can use the contact form on my website. Any way you can find me, just about any way.
So we've got like 5.5 minutes left. Take a couple of minutes and impart some pearls of wisdom to authors out there or to people who would like to write. Give them some things to think about, like doing interviews and just writing.
If you're a first-time novelist or poet or journalist, my advice to you is study your craft. Study, study, study. Read everything you can get your hands on how to write and write well. Books by Stephen King, James Scott Bell, K.M. Wieland, Jamie Gold, Jennifer Blanchard, all of these wonderful people write great blogs and great books, and they will help you out immensely. But if you are already a person who is studying the craft and you're practicing your writing and you have been for a while and now you're writing that first book, my advice to you is learn everything that you can about publishing. Don't just jump on the first publisher that comes along and say, please publish my book. Write, edit, revise, write, edit, revise. Get a good editor. Use beta readers. Study how to. And then talk to lots of other authors and find out how they did it. And then go wisely. Don't just leap over the cliff and say, yay, I finished my book, let's be published, wee! Please don't do that.
Yeah, you will get taken quick, fast, in a hurry.
My number one goal in life is for indie authors, not their books, not to be seen as quote-unquote self-published. I want every indie book to look as quality and as sharp and professional as any traditionally published book that's out there, because I want to see the indie author get the same recognition and the same stature as traditionally published authors get, because we deserve it. We're as good, and it's time we get our recognition.
Amen, sister. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Yvonne Mason. This is my show, Off the Chain. I am your host. My guest tonight has been Sherry Rentzler, who is an amazing author and a veteran, and to her we say thank you for serving our country. Sherry and I have been talking about many things tonight, and one of those things is putting yourself out there as an author. I invite every artist out there to contact me to be on this show. There is no charge to you. This show is free to you in order to help you succeed. Because my mantra is we are only as successful as we allow others to be. That is very important to me. I've been in this business for a long, long time. I have been in the valleys. I've been on the mountains. I have been taken by a Vanity Press publisher when I first started. So I've forged my own path. And as Sherry says, indie authors deserve the recognition of our craft. We've worked hard for it. We've put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into it. We have cried over our craft. We've laughed over our craft. And in some cases, like me, we have threatened to throw our craft in the garbage. And I'm sure Sherry has too. That being said, ladies and gentlemen, it is very important to put yourself out there. Yes, you're probably going to get rejected. We all have. But like Sherry says, you get a thick skin. Correct, Sherry?
That's correct.
You get that thick skin, you put on your big girl and boy panties, and you keep walking your path. If you are,
you keep moving forward.
Exactly. If you're as passionate about your craft as Sherry and I are, and you cannot not write because the voices in the head will not shut up, then you do it. And you contact me. You get on this show, because I guarantee you this show goes on 8 different podcasts after it's over, including iTunes and TuneIn. If you really are serious, let's do this. Tomorrow night, my guest will be musical artist Ken Tucker. He is a musician as well as a songwriter. We will be talking to him and playing some of his music. He's been out there for a while. Lovely man. Lovely music. He plays blues. Sherry, you got to listen in because you'll love it.
Oh, sounds good. And just before you go, Yvonne, I'd like to say thank you very much for having me. I really enjoyed it, and I appreciate the opportunity that you've given me to talk about my work.
Well, you're quite welcome, my new friend, and thank you for the honor of allowing me to interview you. It makes me feel good to help you succeed. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, understand this one more time. We are only as successful as we allow someone else to be. Never be too proud to share your success with another artist, because it is very important that we do that. And if we don't succeed, because we lose our name out there. And with that, I will say, Sherry, again, thank you, dear, for the honor of being able to interview you. And I will talk to you as soon as the show ends here shortly. I will tell you good night, but don't hang up yet.
Yes, ma'am.
Good night, ladies and gentlemen. We will see you later. All right, sweetheart, thank you so much.
Oh, Yvonne, it was such fun. Thank you so much. And I'm really, really looking forward to meeting you in person. You got to save me one big hug, okay?
I'll save you too.
Okay. And we'll sit down and we'll talk vampires and dragons and black and white movies and baby boomer shit, and we'll just have a good time.
Yep. Southern Sisters Unite.
You betcha. And thank you so much.
Thank you, darling. Good night.
And I'll stay in touch.
All right. Please do. Good night.
Okay. Night-night.
Night-night.